This is the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Bitcoin has shown itself relatively immune to regulatory interference. In 2019, and that's Middle Ages in Bitcoin terms, China's central bank started targeting crypto exchanges and warned people to stay away from digital currencies. And this in a country that accounts for 65% of all Bitcoin mining in the world. Earlier this month, China's Inner Mongolia region announced plans to ban cryptocurrency mining projects and shut down existing activity in a bid to cut down on the energy-consuming operation. In 2019, following the news that China would target crypto exchanges, Bitcoin dropped nearly 50% and then promptly recovered all of these losses and then some. In 2018, India announced a ban on cryptocurrency trades. Some other countries have various forms of restrictions on crypto exchanges, usually by denying them access to banking facilities. Taiwan and China are just two examples of this. This has led some, like hedge fund billionaire Ray Dalio, to question whether governments faced with bloated and unsustainable bond markets due to overborrowing might not someday attempt to ban Bitcoin. But experience suggests that blunt instrument will fail. Bitcoin's price and the decentralized nature of its virtual economy continues to shrug off any attempt to curtail it or shut it down. At the Blockchain Africa conference last week, we heard many speakers from Nigeria talk about how cryptos have exploded in that country. A 2020 online survey by data platform Statista found that 32% of those Nigerians who took part in the survey use cryptocurrencies, and that's the highest proportion of any country in the world. According to the BBC, Nigeria ranked in third place in crypto trades after the US and Russia in 2020, generating more than $400 million worth of transactions. Some context here might help. The Central Bank of Nigeria devalued the Naira by 24% last year, and a further devaluation, perhaps 10%, is predicted this year. In 2017, the Central Bank of Nigeria banned banks from facilitating cryptocurrency-related transactions, but the ban was largely unenforced. Now the bank has reiterated the ban and this time is carrying through with its threats and shutting down bank accounts of those trading in cryptos. On exchanges like Luno, Bitcoin often trades at a premium of 36% to the spot price available in other countries, and we're talking here about Luno, Nigeria. Joining us to explore this and other developments on the continent is Marius Raitz, Luno's Africa executive. Hi, Marius. People might find it rather unbelievable that Bitcoin at Luno, Nigeria, at times is traded at a 36% premium to the price you'd pay elsewhere. What is the premium now, and why is it so high in Nigeria?
Hi, Kieran. Thanks for having me on the podcast today. Yes, so the premium currently is around 50%.
Did you say 50%?
50% premium.
Wow.
So to unpack that a bit, if you convert the Naira price for Bitcoin in Nigeria to USD using the USD Naira exchange rate, and you compare the USD price in Naira versus the USD price in international exchanges, you will see that the price in Nigeria in USD terms is trading at a 50% premium to what you would pay on Coinbase or on Bitstamp or any of the other large international crypto exchanges.
50% is quite astonishing. Why is that?
Given a couple of good reasons. I think, you know, typically you, especially in emerging markets, you see price differences between, firstly between local exchanges. So if we use South Africa as an example, we've got a couple of exchanges here, Luno, Valor, Altcoin Trader, and each exchange is its own marketplace, essentially. So each exchange has its own marketplace of buyers and sellers. And you would, you know, usually see a, you know, 1 to 2% price difference between these local platforms. And that is because the price of Bitcoin is determined by the traders and what they're willing to pay for it on that platform on that day. Now, so if we compare this to something, you know, that people know, let's use, for example, the iPhone. You know, if you go to eBay or to Amazon, you'll probably pay slightly different prices. And that's because they've got a different supply and demand, on each of those platforms or each of those, you know, e-commerce platforms. But if you look at Nigeria, we've seen that premium jump over the last 6 to 7 weeks. And the main reason for that is the central bank in Nigeria's announcement early in February that they're now banning banks and financial institutions from interacting or processing payments on behalf of cryptocurrency exchanges. So the impact of that, you know, was absolutely dramatic. And because the result of that was that customers of Luno and other cryptocurrency exchanges in the market now could no longer deposit Naira onto Luna to buy Bitcoin, and could also not withdraw their Naira from Luna and from the other platforms to, you know, to cash out or to move from their crypto back into the bank account. So the impact of that was, you know, a lot of customers at fiat Naira selling on these exchanges, and they had to make a decision, you know, either they keep it in Naira, you know, and have their money depreciate, which you're seeing happening in Nigeria, or they buy Bitcoin, you know, with the Naira and they send it elsewhere. Maybe international, maybe they've got international bank accounts, so they're sending it elsewhere to cash out, or they convert it into a stable coin, you know, or they just convert it into Bitcoin and as an asset. So that has increased the demand. And of course, you know, with fewer sellers in the market, you know, they had more power than normal. So there was this imbalance, or there is this imbalance in the market, and that has had an impact on the price. But if you look at Nigeria, the market as a whole, including the FX market, you will see that they've got multiple USD rates. And that can also be just as volatile. So you've got the USD rate through banks, and then you've got the parallel market through BDC operators, where, you know, there's also a significant, you know, 20-30% premium on the price of USD in the parallel market. You know, so whether it's Bitcoin or whether it's USD rates in Nigeria, you know, it'll often vary wildly between platforms. But the challenge is, you know, very few people sitting outside Nigeria can really benefit from this high premium, because it's so difficult to move fiat money into Nigeria, and then also so difficult to move fiat out of Nigeria. And now with this ban in place, you know, it's impossible for any investor or trader to move their fiat currency onto exchanges and from exchanges. So yes, it's a massive premium at this point.
It does beg the question, how is Luno Nigeria doing if you've got all of these restrictions and difficulties?
Kieran, Luno Nigeria was our fastest growing market before the central bank ban. Now, we grew at a faster rate in terms of new account openings, and Nigeria also surpassed SA in terms of active customers. So it was a thriving market for Luno, and Nigeria is among the biggest, you know, the biggest users of cryptocurrency around the world. The impact of that on our customers, so obviously I think, you know, at a high level, we share the Central Bank of Nigeria's concern for Nigerians, but we feel that the approach, you know, it has taken here does not achieve the objectives, you know, in this instance. And we're seeing some unintended consequences. So firstly, you're sitting with millions of Nigerians on Luna and other platforms that are not able to access their money. They're not able to withdraw their Naira back into the bank accounts. So that's a, you know, that's a massive, you know, problem at this stage. And, you know, it's creating a lot of pressure, you know, on banks, and also pressure on the central bank to give people access to the money. And, you know, so on Luna, naturally, you know, if there's no fiat on-ramp and off-ramp, it will impact volume. So Luna's volumes dropped by, you know, 70-80%. Now, we're still seeing Nigerian customers trade. We're still seeing Nigerian customers using Luna savings products in Nigeria. So they can put their Bitcoin in a savings wallet and interest on that. So we're still seeing some activity. We're also seeing people still signing up. And, you know, so there's still a demand for Bitcoin. And now in the market, we're seeing, you know, the impact of this ban on, you know, centralized exchanges with fiat on and off ramps is that other forms of other types of exchanges, like peer-to-peer platforms, you know, over the last couple of weeks increased customer numbers, and they've increased volumes on those platforms. So, you know, while there's a big impact on Luno and Luno's customers, the industry in Nigeria is continuing to thrive, and, you know, people will continue to find ways to buy Bitcoin.
Okay, I mean, we heard at the Blockchain Africa conference last week how Nigerians are finding ways around the Central Bank of Nigeria's hostility to cryptos. Many Nigerians have foreign bank accounts, and they use these to purchase Bitcoin. So they might have an account in the United States, and then they ship that money to Nigeria or to Luno, and they would buy Bitcoin that way. And as you mentioned, others are trading peer-to-peer. In other words, what seems to be happening is that Nigerians are being forced into crypto adoption, whether stablecoins or Bitcoin, and they're unlikely to leave that space. Have I got that right? They kind of enter into this crypto sphere, and they're kind of stuck in this bubble.
Yes, so I think, you know, we've always seen grassroots level growth, you know, especially across emerging markets. So that is because people, you know, can use Bitcoin, you know, whether it's to get a better yield, you know, on an investment, or whether it's to continue doing business, and send money cross border, for example, or do payments using Bitcoin and save costs that way. People have continued to start using Bitcoin out of their own, and they've always found ways in which they can buy and sell Bitcoin. So before exchanges, people used to buy and sell Bitcoin, through WhatsApp groups, through Facebook, Messenger, and through the early days of peer-to-peer platforms as well. So, as I just said, the impact is already there. You can already see peer-to-peer platforms, and just a recap there, peer-to-peer platforms don't rely on, a bank. So that they connect the buyer and the seller, but the buyer and the seller move the money directly between, between them. So there's no reliance on a financial institution or on a bank, to facilitate the transaction or for funds to flow into and out of. By the way, we experienced the same thing in Malaysia in 2016, when the central bank made a similar announcement. Peer-to-peer volume shot through the roof, when the central bank banned banks from engaging with exchanges. The outcome there was, regulation. So it was a net positive for the market. The Securities and Exchange Commission in Malaysia, that took a year or two, but they've announced regulations and we've got a thriving market in Malaysia at this point. So it's not all, doom and gloom. I think there is a, silver lining and there is, some hope in Nigeria as well. But we will continue to see innovation in Nigeria. So we're likely to see a Naira-backed stablecoin in the short, in the near future. Some of the exchanges, peer-to-peer platforms will continue to grow, continue to innovate, continue to become more user-friendly. So no, it won't prevent Nigerians from buying Bitcoin. Not at all.
So just on that point, if you've got a Naira-backed stablecoin, how is that going to assist you when you actually want to cash out of your cryptos?
It's not really going to assist you, in cashing out into Naira to use, but it's going to assist traders. Many traders on platforms without other forms of stablecoins, like USDC, for example, they've effectively stopped trading, or they've cashed out the crypto into Naira, but they're sitting with the Naira in the bank account, so they can't really actively trade. So they'll probably look at trading a Bitcoin Naira stablecoin trading pair, instead of leaving the local currency in Naira. So it just presents another use case. It's not going to solve the problem where people need the Naira to pay for school fees or to put food on the table, but it's going to enable traders to continue trading. It's not a silver bullet, but we've seen talks of Naira stablecoin being developed in the market.
It's clear that regulations are coming to cryptos, including here in South Africa, where crypto exchanges like Luno will become licensed financial providers, probably sometime in the next year or so. But there's some compelling evidence that Bitcoin specifically is relatively immune to regulatory interference. When China started targeting cryptos in 2019, the price actually dropped sharply and then rebounded and broke new records. What's your view on the issue of regulation and its likely impact on Bitcoin? It does seem that the Bitcoin network is, the effect is beyond any single government's control. And that's how it was intended, actually, from its birth 12 years ago.
I think if you look back, all disruptive new technologies encounter regulation on the path to mass adoption. So if you think Uber with the taxi industry, or you think Airbnb with the hotel industry, but these haven't stopped these companies from becoming the corporations they are today. In fact, you can argue that regulations actually help them to get where they are today. So from a crypto perspective and general finance, I think trust is vital for any company that deals with your finances. Now, but in particular with crypto, obviously it's not widely understood yet, and it's still very, very early on. This year, crypto caught the headlines last year, as a result of institutional investment and a couple of big names. But we've only really seen a handful of big investors, entering the market. I think historically, the industry has faced limited regulation, but that is changing. I've touched on Malaysia. In the US, we've had regulations in the form of licenses in certain states for quite a number of years now. And that is one of the main drivers, and why these big institutions are comfortable in investing in Bitcoin in the US, because it's a regulated market. There's a bit more sophistication from a regulatory perspective, and these corporations feel more comfortable, to put their working capital, to put their funds into crypto. We've seen the FATF publish strong guidelines, and locally, you've covered this quite a bit. The FSCA's intention, to bring out the licensing regime for crypto intermediaries. But then I think also important to touch on, there's this notion that the market is completely unregulated, and that's not true. Now, in many markets, we see regulation and we see the positive impact. So I touched on the US now. If not for regulation there, would we have seen institutional investors? No. Would we see companies like Visa and MasterCard, launching crypto teams and recently outlining the crypto roadmaps for both these markets? In Malaysia, we're seeing a thriving market. We're seeing the barrier to entry being raised, and it's weeding out bad actors. So I think regulation is necessary, but it's important that it's designed and implemented effectively. And we have to acknowledge, I think, that regulators don't have an easy task, not by a long mile. So, but one thing, and that's what we're experiencing in Nigeria now, is an outright ban on crypto creates an underground market. And the result of that is lack of visibility for regulators and a lack of protection for consumers. So our view is that we should look at an activity-based approach. And that is exactly what the FCCA is following now. So focus on the intermediaries. They have to protect customer information, for example, ID details, ID documents, proof of address, consumer info. And they also have to protect assets, whether it's people sending rands to them, whether it's investors holding their Bitcoin, keeping their Bitcoin in a savings wallet, etc. So I think at the end of the day, it's important to regulate that on-ramp and off-ramp. We've seen the impact that it can have in other markets around the world.
Yeah, I was kind of referring to the Nigerian Central Bank basically banning any connection there between the banks and the crypto exchanges. And you mentioned Malaysia there as well. Okay, so, and I agree. I think that regulation is actually going to maybe encourage a little bit more adoption, particularly from the institutional side. Can we turn now to Luno South Africa? And by the way, we talked about this 50% premium on Luno Nigeria. There's also a premium, generally speaking, on Luno South Africa. Maybe it's between 2-3%. It's very small, but people do trade that. They do find an arbitrage opportunity buying overseas, buying Bitcoin overseas, and shipping it to Luno and selling it there. Do you still see that as one of the drivers of your business?
Yes, we do. So I won't say it's a driver of the business, but it's definitely one use case, and that's people exploiting, taking advantage of price differences. A lot of people arbitrage between local exchanges. So it's low margin but high volume, and people arbitraging between international platforms and Luno. So they're obviously limited by your single discretionary allowance. So individuals can arbitrage up to 1 million rand per annum. And yeah, and it definitely, so the premium is smaller. It's between 2-5% in a given day. But yeah, it's definitely something, one of the use cases that a lot of people get introduced to crypto. So a lot of new clients, through talks around the bribe, will explore crypto in this way. And then end up using other products. So they end up understanding how crypto send and receive works. They end up putting some of their profits in a savings wallet, for example. So now it's an entry point for a lot of people, a lot of new investors, a lot of new speculators into the market.
Right. Of course, you're talking there, you can use your discretionary allowance, which is 1 million rand per year, but you also have your foreign investment allowance, if you're tax compliant, of 10 million. So you actually have 11 million rand a year that you can use for that arbitrage, right?
Yeah, correct. We've heard stories of a lot of people struggling to get approval, to arbitrage more than the 1 million. But that's true. You have to go through the sales route. You have to, declare your assets essentially. And if approved, then you can send out up to a max of 11 million rand per annum. Now, if you trade at a 3-4% profit or net profit, then you're looking at, 300,000-400,000 rand per annum, that you can make an extra, some extra money. So that's, that's significant. That's, of course, before tax. So
right.
You still have to take that into account as well.
Yes. And you also run the risk that while the Bitcoin is being shipped from overseas to here, which can take an hour or two, that the Bitcoin price drops and you lose your profit. And it has happened. I just want to, now, Luno, you offer Bitcoin, you offer Bitcoin Cash, you offer Ethereum, XRP, and Litecoin. Did I miss out any?
Given we recently also added USDC, USD coin, which is a stable coin that's backed by the US dollar.
And how's the uptake on that, on USDC?
Given we've seen a fairly good uptake, especially in Nigeria, for I think for obvious reasons. People sitting with Naira in their Luno accounts, you know, I would now probably prefer to convert that into USDC, you know, because it's potentially more stable, less volatile. So Nigeria, we've seen good uptake in South Africa as well. But it's still very early, you know, we can't really say, you know, with certainty. It's only been live for 4 weeks or so. But USDC, along with USDT, you know, is one of the most popular US dollar backed stable coins around the world. And you know, it's gaining popularity and also, you know, increasing adoption globally.
Right. And USDT, of course, is USD Tether, which is the biggest stable coin in the world. And I think what a lot of people are doing or using that for, the use case there is, if you made a bit of profits in Bitcoin, you can shift it straight away into USDC or USDT and just park your profits there in a stable currency or a stably backed currency. Is that what you're experiencing? Is that why people are using USDC on your exchange?
Correct. So it's traders parking the fiat float in USDC. But then also across Africa, where people are still major challenges from a remittance perspective. People still, you know, lose a lot of value, you know, through costs going through intermediaries. So in countries like Nigeria, we will see people using USDC for payments as well, because it's less volatile than the Naira. It's easier to access USDC than it is to access actual US dollars or hard currency. So, you know, it's unfortunate that we're seeing this ban now, but now the potential for payments in Nigeria is also, you know, fairly big.
Are people willing to accept USDC as a payment in Nigeria?
Kieran, I think broadly speaking, we're still in the asset phase. So most people enter the crypto markets from a speculation, you know, from an investment perspective. But in certain countries like Nigeria, we're seeing the payments use case being fast-tracked. So even with Bitcoin earlier in the year in 2020, you know, people started using Bitcoin for local payments, for cross-border transfers, because of the lack of hard currency. So I think in Nigeria, because of necessity, the payments use case has been fast-tracked. And so I think, you know, the same will happen with USDC. We will see more traders and more businesses starting to accept crypto, and also in the form of USDC, and especially people doing business across the region. So people doing business cross border, you know, I think, you know, and we've seen this with Bitcoin, have turned to cryptocurrency because it's easier, and believe it or not, it's also cheaper. You know? So I think, you know, Africa is, you know, going to fast track, or emerging markets at large will fast track the payments use case, although it's still very early days. We don't have the network effects, so we don't have a critical mass of people at this point wanting to or willing to receive payment in USDC or in Bitcoin. No, so why would you then use it? So, but we're seeing the first signs that you know, there's a growing demand for it, and that there's an increase in people willing to accept it.
What about this idea of staking your coins? In other words, you can lock up your Bitcoin or your Ethereum and you can earn interest on it, and they call that staking in the crypto space. What's the take-up been like for that?
Kieran, maybe just to clarify, so there's a slight difference between staking, or there's a difference between staking and what we offer our customers on Luno. So with staking, you essentially lock up your crypto for a specified amount of time. And, you know, to receive rewards for participating in the transaction validation process. And that is on a proof of stake blockchain. So that's a mouthful and it's more technical, you know, and it's maybe too technical to really unpack now. But now it's similar to crypto mining. So you stake your crypto, you put it on exchange, you lock it in, and that, you know, helps to achieve network consensus. And in exchange for that, you receive a reward. So Ethereum 2.0 is one example. Ethereum moved to a proof of stake, you know, consensus mechanism, and certain platforms like Binance and Coinbase now offer Ethereum staking. So the returns, you know, specifically on Coinbase for staking your Ethereum is around 3.5 to 7%. So Luno works differently. So essentially on Luno, you lend your Bitcoin to Genesis, which is Luno's lending partner. They're the largest digital asset lender in the world. And so on their side, they've got borrowers. So this is large institutions, you know, market makers, you know, people that believe, you know, they can generate a higher return than the cost of borrowing. So it's essentially taking, you know, on crypto deposits and paying an interest to the depositor, you know, from the margin that Genesis make from the crypto borrowers. So we offer three savings products, Bitcoin and Ethereum, and our yield on that is 4%. And then we also offer USDC savings wallet with a 7.6% yield per annum. So just important to note there is that, you know, you have to move your crypto into a separate savings wallet product. You earn interest in crypto. So on a monthly basis, you know, you will receive your interest payout in Bitcoin or in Ethereum. So we've seen a good uptake. We've, you know, understandably, people are still hesitant. So, you know, first they had to understand crypto and take the first step. And now there's this concept of earning interest on your crypto. So we've seen long-term in holders, so people that have, you know, signed up a couple of years ago, or investors, so not traders, because traders, you know, won't have instant access to the savings. So it's people with a risk appetite, and people that's not dependent on, you know, the money in the short run. So people in search for better yield. And I think that's why in 2020, with lower interest rates, we saw, you know, a decent uptake of this, you know, in South Africa. And now at this point, we've got, you know, more or less 50,000 active savers. So it's people, you know, with actively saving and earning interest there. So I think we've had a good uptake here.
I wonder how long before institutions that are looking for yield start jumping on this crypto thing. You know, when you can start earning 7% on a US dollar stable coin. Of course, there are some issues there. You know, they want to make sure that you've got institutional grade custody, that the lending partner, in this case Genesis, is safe. They've got all of these things that they've got to look at. But it can't be long now before people start looking at these rather attractive looking yields that you can get in the space. Which brings me to my next question. And this idea that's been put out by Michael Saylor of MicroStrategy, that you will never need to sell your Bitcoin. You know, his whole philosophy is you buy Bitcoin and you hold it and you hold it and, you know, for the next 100 years. If you need money or you need dollars or rands, you borrow against your Bitcoin, which you can, of course, now do in the decentralized finance space. So he's certainly not planning to sell his Bitcoin. He just borrowed. He issued a zero coupon bond, $1 billion worth of Bitcoin. He converted that into Bitcoin. You know, you are starting to see some institutional adoption here and some corporates actually moving their treasury cash into Bitcoin. Not on a big scale, yes, yet. But do you see this as one of the big coming trends over the next couple of years?
Kieran, yes. I think, you know, maybe just a reminder, or a health check, that, you know, we're still very, very early into, you know, the crypto market. You know, and I think we have to be honest with ourselves. I think, you know, we'd be naive to, you know, if we believe that every single person buying Bitcoin is doing so to hedge against inflation. That's just not the case. Yes, you see some people and maybe mainly institutional investors, you know, in the US, for example, taking in positions as a hedge, as part of a diversification strategy. In Africa, no, so it's speculation. It's people doing arbitrage trading. And yes, you have more sophisticated investors, people taking positions in crypto, for the long run. So they don't need the cash in the short run, and it's maybe 1 to 10% allocation. The lending, borrowing rands against your Bitcoin or borrowing dollars against your Bitcoin, it's a new use case that's developing, it's fast developing in the US. It obviously gives people easier access to capital. And I think especially in Africa, you know, we can see the impact of this, you know, being substantial. And I think, you know, it can lead to one of the biggest distributions of wealth across, you know, across the world. And Africa is unique because we're seeing a lot of first-time investors. So it's the first time to invest for many people. You know, and the reasons, you know, for accessing crypto is because maybe it's easier than going through, you know, a traditional investment manager. Maybe because lower limit supply, you can buy 10 rands or 1,000 naras of crypto, and also lower interest rates across emerging markets. So people have got excess cash that they can put in, or they're in search for better yields. So the incentives are stronger. On top of that, Africa has a young population with a median age of 18. So it's far younger than any other continent. It's, you know, developing at a faster rate. And there's a potential user base of young, you know, Africans already accustomed to payment solutions. with, you know, through the advent of mobile money. And, you know, we're also seeing, and the data shows that 21% of sub-Saharan Africans now use a mobile money service. So I think this sets the scene, you know, from a crypto lending environment perspective. You know, we're likely to see more young Africans over the next decade getting access to crypto and buying crypto. And if you can borrow local currency against your Bitcoin holdings, you know, giving people easier access to capital, you know, that's an absolute no-brainer in some of these markets where it's very difficult for someone to walk into a bank branch, and to just apply for a loan, so that you can kickstart your business, so that you can, start a business. So, you know, I think without going into too much detail here, I think it's a new use case that's developing. It's fast developing. The US is setting the trend at this point, and I think, the biggest impact can potentially be in emerging markets.
Are you planning to introduce lending using Bitcoin or Ethereum as collateral anytime soon?
Kieran, I think, you know, if you, from a regulatory point of view, we're obviously not allowed to lend out any fiat currencies. But again, it's a fast growing trend. Genesis, the biggest lender in the world, the average first loan size for a first-time lender is $2.3 million. So this shows you this is pretty much an institutional game at this point, not retail driven. And then just to reiterate again, you know, the biggest challenge at this point in SA and across emerging markets and globally for that matter, you know, is easy and safe access to crypto. Most people still have got no idea, and it's our job, you know, to go back to the basics. Not get fixated on future use cases, but offer the basic infrastructure to people so that they can get started in a safe and easy way.
Right. Okay. Last year, Luna was acquired by Digital Currency Group, and the announcement was made, you plan to grow your customer base to 1 billion within 10 years. That's a hugely ambitious target. Any news on that front?
Kieran, we've experienced good growth during 2020 and also the first quarter in 2021. We recently signed up our 7 millionth customer. That's across all our markets, and 1 million of that customers came in the last 7 weeks. So we've since the December price movement going into this year, we've seen tremendous growth. And SA specifically, we've welcomed 1.2 million customers in 2020. So we've had a good year locally. But the interesting metric is more around active customers. So you can have customers installing the app and going through the verification stage without actually transacting. But the interesting stat is that we've had 45% increase in active customers from Q4 to Q1 this year. Now, that's a combination of new entrants, so new customers, buying Bitcoin for the first time. It's longer-term investors buying the dip, so following the Rand cost average method. And then also speculators, of course. The price is volatile. We see speculators trying to take advantage of that. And obviously, it's a high-risk game. We've had decent growth. We obviously, for us, it's a long-term game. We're not building a platform or company, we're building something that's independent on the price. And I think, based on growth trends we've seen over the last year or two and based on, all of the momentum that we're seeing in the market, whether it's from a regulatory perspective, or whether it's from, different spheres, better information out there, more infrastructure being built, making it easy for investors. I think over the next 10 years, and we've spoken about this in the past, I think, our target of 1 billion customers really is doable.
Fascinating. Of those 7 million, so you just signed up your 7th million customer. How many of those are in Africa?
Here in the vast majority. So we've got, roughly 4.5 to 5 million of the 7 million based in Africa, and that's across our three African markets. So we're active in SA, our first market that we launched in SA back in 2013. Nigeria, which we touched on earlier, is our fastest growing market, and then also Uganda in East Africa. So we've also entered the East African space. We've got a local exchange in Uganda, and similar to what we're doing in SA, we're also engaging with regulators in Uganda. We're bank partners. We've got our own program there from an educational perspective, meeting with customers. And so, West Africa, East Africa, and South Africa, those are the three regions that we're focusing on. And, we're on a mission to expand to new markets as well. So, We believe that emerging markets have a lot of promise, especially Africa from a crypto perspective.
And why did you choose Uganda and not Kenya?
So a couple of reasons. So firstly, you have to look at the demand in the local markets. Of course, we see demand in Kenya as well. Kenya, after Eastern Nigeria and Ghana, Kenya is the fourth ranked market in Africa when it comes to, things like Google searches for Bitcoin, comes to the level of familiarity with Bitcoin, etc. Uganda also has a local blockchain industry. The regulators are proactive. We've actually met with them there. You've got more friendly banks, so it's possible for you to solve the problem, and that is for local people to use their local currency to buy Bitcoin. So that is the need that we're solving. So Ugandans can use their local bank accounts to buy Bitcoin on Luno and begin to withdraw funds. Kenya has a similar situation to Nigeria at this point. So the Central Bank of Kenya took a similar stance a couple of years ago, really, actually, where they've banned banks, commercial banks, from dealing with cryptocurrency businesses. So we're in talks with the central bank, we're in talks with commercial banks there, and now before we can launch the business there, we need to cross the regulatory hurdle first. So that's why you won't see any centralized exchanges actively operating and advertising in Kenya at this stage. So you typically see peer-to-peer platforms and local crypto communities flourishing in Kenya.
Marius Rietz, Luno's Africa Executive. We're going to leave it there. Thanks very much, Marius.
Thanks, Kim. It's been a great chat.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.